Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening and welcome to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. After some minor confusion, it is Jake Watson in for Matt Beadle. You've just heard him. We've done a bit of a switch. So Matt's on in drive time today, and I'm sitting in until 9 p.m. Arsenal and Brentford for you this evening. Arsenal up first, and we've got the chaps from the Gunnerstown Radio with me in the studio. We've got Dave and Chris, and it's been a long, long time since Chris. I've seen Dave yeah. a number of times, but how are we? Should we do a little catch up?
Well, you're chirpy.
I am in a good mood.
They've had a good performance.
I've had a can of fizzy pop, so yeah. I'm like a child.
And his beautiful pink. So, do you know what? I'm also going to make a homage. It's an Adidas top. So clearly, you've got the abominations like Man City who have got their Puma top, and we're sporting lovely Adidas shirts. And actually, they've done a good job with your lot as well, haven't they?
It's so. All right, isn't it? Are you a fan of the pink, Dave? Real men wear pink.
I don't mind you wearing it. It suits you.
So who do you dislike wearing it?
We've never had a pink
Jamie
shirt.
Jamie Vardy,
probably.
Come on, guys. Do we want to get along this evening?
No, there are some pretty... Man City's a weird sort of pinky.
It's an abomination. Yeah, it's... And Crystal Palace's one yesterday, which looks like it's got like leopard, weird tiger print things across the front. They're away kit.
This is the thing. I was reading an article yesterday. I can't remember what paper it was on, but they did a rundown of the best and worst kits of the season. And it's so subjective, though, isn't it? You know, if somebody tries something different, somebody can deem it the worst thing ever. But I like it when people try something a little bit different. But, you know, if it's any consolation, the Arsenal kits were both, you know, the top of the best ones. I have to say, the home one, it's stellar, isn't it? It's a proper kit. We both purchased it this year.
That's an irony, though, isn't it?
So I've got my producer just picking me up a kit here on my screen. This is the Stevenage away kit.
Good grief.
Wow, what is that? I can't even quite describe it. I know it's literally
like
here for people listening.
An intern had a massive play on Photoshop. Yeah. And, you know, they just said, go nuts.
It's navy, and then somebody's done... Then when you get a paintbrush and dip it in and then throw it... Yeah. Throw it at the canvas. That's what we've got there. Some nice yellow and red with Burger King in the middle. There we are. There's a bit, shout for Burger King.
I was just going to say that it's the irony.
XL bacon double cheese for me, please, if you're listening.
It's the irony of the bruised banana, though, because if you actually were there at the time, it wasn't actually that popular.
Yeah.
And now, of course, in hindsight, wonderful retro kit. Everyone's the bruised banana back. At the time, it was very mixed. It was very unusual.
But so Arsenal have done that, and Adidas have done that well. That feels a little bit, that Leicester one feels a little bit retro. West Ham's kits as well.
I loved West Ham's new kit.
Yeah, they look really retro. I think, clearly...
That was one of the worst ones.
What?
They hated
that.
That was matching their kit of about the early 80s, wasn't it? Yeah. The Alan Devonshire, that sort of era.
The problem they said was it with, because they've got the top half as the light blue, and the bottom half as the, what's the
claret.
Official claret. And the shorts is the same. So it looks like, because then the bottom half of the shirt and the shorts almost merge in, like you've got your shorts up to your armpits. That's why they didn't like that one. Which is quite funny once they pointed it out, but that didn't initially jump out on me. But Norwich did it a couple of years. Do you remember vintage retro Norwich where they had the blue and yellow kind of sit kit almost?
Yeah.
It was really speckly. Well, a few years ago, they brought that back as a kind of an away version, as a white one. And that was kind of what it was sold as. You know, this was like the glory of when Norwich went, I think UEFA Cup quarterfinals. Yeah,
early 90s.
And let's bring this one back. Everyone hated it, and it was a white one. So you try something. But yeah, the collar of the new Arsenal one, it is...
Yeah,
it's
we
proper,
love it.
You know,
I went out on Saturday
vintage
morning,
Adidas.
Got both of them, spent an absolute fortune, north of 110 quid, which was ridiculous for both.
You didn't get any of the patches then?
No. I'm not getting Premier League patches, that's for sure.
Shorts and socks?
You can't avoid having visit Rwanda, however.
Nothing you can do about that, but we might as well talk about Arsenal, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
We did play at the weekend. So.
What did they play like in this lovely kit of yours when they played Burnley this weekend? Go on, that was seamlessly done.
As I say, it was very... There were periods of play where you thought, wow, and a lot of the time actually it was very bitty, and Burnley had a game plan, stuck to it very well, as you'd expect from Burnley, and they made it very, very difficult for Arsenal, I thought, but it's just like that. I get that. It's almost like, to give you an analogy, it's like early 90s Arsenal with Ian Wright. You're not playing well, but you're never thinking you're not going to win against that sort of team because you've got Aubameyang. That's literally what it's like right now. You just think, give him half a chance, he's going to score. So I wasn't unduly worried at 1-1. It was always going to be him that scored it.
Yeah, I mean, if you think back to that first half, for me, Burnley did what we expected them to do. They went route one with their keeper. They tried to get the ball into the channels and put the ball into the box. And, of course, when you're swinging that many balls into the box, eventually some of it gets through. Or, you know, you've got a goalkeeper in Burnt Leno who loves to punch it. You know,
and you've also got two central defenders who haven't played together ever.
Yeah. So it felt... I think there was probably a bit of nervousness from the fans because the style of play was really the antithesis of what... who we are and our our identity.
Word.
I know. I'm
mean,
busting
Dave,
it up
you know what that meant?
Yes.
Antithesis?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm working.
Tell me.
The opposite. Come on.
The extreme opposite of.
Yes.
Thank you. That was just in case nobody else understood. I obviously understood.
Yeah. Thanks, mate. Anyway, yeah, so for me, it felt more difficult than it actually was. I didn't really think Burnley created loads of chances. Burnt Leno made one save, and that really was a decent save, but Ashley Barnes was offside right in front of him. And then the goal was just...
But you do
it was
have...
a bit fortunate. The goal that they scored was a bit fortunate. Took a deflection
yeah,
and then
massively fortunate.
Went into Barnes's bumbling shins to knock
do,
it home.
I do think,
so...
as an aside, I was just saying to the person sat with me that Dwight McNeil is a talent, though. And you do feel
do you
that I really do actually. You
he
do you do feel that he's not going to be at Burnley next year, and you do feel that you give him a little moment, and he's going to create something, and that's what he did. I mean, okay, I got a deflection, but you know, a little shimmy, early cross. That's what I like about players like that. You don't always have to go at the byline. You don't always have to beat a man. If the cross is there to be made early, you
get it.
And he's that sort of player, and that's what I like about him. Actually.
You mean the opposite of like Aaron Lennon, who is well, like get to the byline.
I forgot he was
in,
even still
it.
Playing football until he appeared. The Emirates on Saturday morning.
So the goal we scored the goal early as well, I think, which settled some nerves, and then they lumped the ball in and it was a little bit uncomfortable. Overall, it wasn't exactly an amazing Arsenal performance, but I don't know what you're going to expect when you've just got a team that are overly physical like Burnley.
Well, two games in, you know, it's 6 points. It's all you could ask for.
Hasn't happened since 2009.
But ultimately, the big thing this season is looking at progression, isn't it? That's what you want. Does the team, I know obviously you've now integrated new players into that as well, which you've also got to take into account, but does it feel like the team is in a better place? It feels it's 12 months along now under Emery.
100%.
Yeah.
I think what we're all waiting on now is to see, as we progress in the next maybe month to 6 weeks, what's the style? Is he going to stick with the same formation every week? Is there going to be a style? Yes, there'll be rotation. Yes, there'll be players coming in for other players, but is he going to stick to this 4-2-3-1? I hope he is. I'm a little bit worried he might, because he switched to a back three in the second half. Maybe that's a little nod to Anfield at the weekend, which I guess you could probably understand if he's going to try and pack the midfield and the central defence, maybe at Anfield. But I just hope we just want to see a style now, because we've definitely got the players.
Yeah.
So it's integration and style now.
Do you know what I kind of hope? I'm hoping I saw glimpses of that actually rings true as the season progresses. We seem to go from back to front a little bit quicker at times. It was difficult against Newcastle. On the opening game of the season, because you know the style and the setup that they had meant that, and I think the amount of players that we had missing caused us an issue. But we seem to move the ball, and we seem to have players that can move the ball from back to front quicker now.
David
and
Luiz definitely made a difference in that. I mean, Giles of
the show.
I saw a tweet he did earlier. He just showed a clip where David Luiz just chipped it out of defence under pressure, perfect pass, 30 meters to feet. Yeah, we don't have anyone who can do that last year.
So is he the man?
Well, he's the man. If we're gonna play, you know, out from the back, he's certainly more the man than anyone we had last year.
Yeah.
And the question will be: is it going to be Luiz and Holding, or is it going to be Luiz and Socrates? My guess is it will be Luiz and Holding, and that quite excites me. That quite excites me, to be honest. But I don't know what you think, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think Holding will come in eventually.
But they'll
rotate it around a little bit. What I found interesting was actually, and I think we're going to talk about him after the ad break, but the space that Ceballos had. Because if you then get teams, if we're talking about being able to transition beyond pressing forwards, Ceballos had so much space in the middle of the park sometimes. It was crazy. So if we can move that back to front quickly, then he's going to have time, he's going to have space, and he's going to be able to find the succulent trio that we have up top.
Mm. On Aubameyang, I think I read or heard beforehand that in the three times before the weekend he'd played Burnley, he'd scored a brace in every game. So I think, if I'm correct, I'll have to double check this in the break, he's got seven. This is the first time he's not scored two against Burnley. So he's got seven in four against them. I mean, with Aubameyang, with Lacazette, who also scored, and was Lacazette Player of the Year last year?
Yes.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? And with this incoming Nicolas Pepe, do you think, because I was just saying to Jimmy Carter before we came on, I think that front three is the, has the potential to be as strong as Liverpool and Man City's. If they click.
I think the difference is we're not going to play them as a front three. But
are you not?
Well, we're not now, so I can't see it.
But going forward, it feels...
Going forward, it feels like a three. Yeah. But Liverpool's is a 4-3-3. Mm. Definitively, it is. Ours is definitely 4-2-3-1 at the moment. Yeah. And Aubameyang, I thought, has looked more comfortable playing wide than he had last season. I mean, I thought he looked really relaxed in position. Because I always think, you know, he is... a better finisher than Lacazette, and in an ideal world you'd want him to be the main man. Mm. But Lacazette, I don't think you'd want him out wide, whereas Aubameyang can do a job. And is it great to have your best goal scorer doing a job? But it looked quite fluid.
It's not
and comfortable at the weekend.
It's not looked too bad with a sample size of one game. But if you think about Liverpool's front three, that they all seem to fit in the positions that they play in. Yeah. Whereas at the moment, you know, you can't really base the Burnley game as, right, well, okay, well, that's our trio and they're all starting to know each other's positions. I don't think we'll really know if it properly works for another half a dozen games.
Well, the big difference is, and this is a criticism, some ex-pros, for example, I've heard Ray Houghton say it on this station, Liverpool is a 4-3-3, it's a great team, but if there is a criticism, there is no creativity anywhere in the three. Whether it's Wijnaldum, Henderson and Fabinho, whether it's Keita, whether it's Ox, those five or six, now there's six players, none of them really have a creative spark, so you're relying solely on the front three. We do. We do now have that creative spark in midfield. That's why I think we'll stick with the 4-2-3-1 and just have that 10 sort of role. And whether it's going to be Ceballos, whether it's going to be Willock, whether it's going to be Ozil is the big question for me.
Mm. It's just a shame about our defenders.
Well, as I say, I mean, I was pleased when we bought David Luiz. Don't get me wrong; I'm not saying I thought about it the whole window, but when it happened, I thought,
"Okay,
that's pretty cool. Yeah, I can deal with that for £8 million." And you know, we have the added option, of course, that he can play in defensive midfield at any given point.
Do,
you know, no question about it. Great to see Torreira back. But I think the interesting one for me is when we had the David Cartledge, the ESPN Spanish football expert, on the show a few weeks ago. He was adamant that Ceballos should be playing in the two as a deep line playmaker, alongside a defensive midfield player, probably Torreira. And that's what I thought we would have. And of course, with Xhaka injured, he played very bravely, two youngsters in Guendouzi and Willock together, and put Ceballos in the 10 role. So there's the question I think everyone wants. Is Ceballos going to be the 10 and therefore Ozil was not going to get a game? Or when everyone's fit, is Ozil going to come back in and Ceballos sit deep? In which case, there's two or three players who aren't going to get a game. But it's a great position to be in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about Dani Ceballos in more depth. Also, Nicolas Pepe. It was the first chance, particularly for a home game, to have a look at him. Also, want to have a word about Willock and Nelson, those two young boys who got that start of the weekend. How did they do? You are listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport.
Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back to Love Sport. It's the Arsenal Fan Show, but later on this evening, 8 p.m. kickoff, it's the Monday night game in the Premier League. Manchester United head to Wolves. By the way, Man United played at Wolves twice last season in the FA Cup and League and lost both times. But Man United started well, haven't they, to the Premier League season with that 4-0 win over Chelsea. Can they make it 2-2 and join Arsenal and Liverpool at the top of the table? I've got the team news for you, and rather interestingly, I'll jump straight in and say that Daniel James, after scoring on his debut the other week, he starts this evening at Molineux. The team in full is David De Gea, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw, McTominay, Pogba, James, Lingard, Martial and Rashford. And for Wolves, it's Patricio, Doherty, Bolly, Cody, Bennett, Johnny, Moutinho, Dendonka, Neves, Jota and Raul Jimenez. That one is an 8 p.m. kickoff. As and when the goals go in, I'll let you know who scored them and who it has gone to. So, chaps, we've got Dave and Chris from the Gunners Town Radio. We're going to talk Pepe and Ceballos. Where do we want to start? Should we go with Ceballos first?
Yeah, I think
I saw people suggesting on Twitter the other day that we are ready for a statue. Is
for
he
the
that
1 year
good?
Loan deal.
Is he that good?
He was quality on Saturday, without doubt.
He was head and shoulders the best player on the pitch. Yeah.
What impressed me was his ability to quickly turn his direction, and that's why people are making these comparisons with Santi Cazorla, because he was going one way, dropping the shoulder and then going the other way. And it's so hard. Anyone that's ever played football, it's so difficult when you get one of those type of nimble players who can turn so quickly.
Particularly when you're playing with your face to goal.
Yeah, it just makes you look like a complete mug as a defender. But he did that. He was able to
just break people's ankles by dropping a shoulder. Yeah.
So for me, that was really impressive. But also, as I said just before the break, the pockets of space that he was finding, that intrigued me. Because if you're going to get teams, that last season what happened is teams thought, well, let's just press Arsenal high and terrify the back four when they're just playing it, you know, across their back four so deep. So you've got teams pressing us high. Because of that, and because Burnley then had a defensive line which sat deeper because of the pace of Aubameyang and Lacazette, Ceballos just found acres of space in the middle, because you've got Burnley's attacking line just pushing. You've got their defence just sitting back, and he was in acres of space. And going back to what you said about Luiz, if Luiz is going to pick the ball up and have a look up and just chip the ball over to him, then that's an outlet. I mean, how that works when you go against a team like Liverpool, you know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Well,
the interesting thing is, I mean, so the guy with the ESPN guy we had on, David Cartledge, was adamant he should be playing in a two in the deeper, but because of that, the ability to avoid the high press, like Santi, you don't know which way because he's two-footed, which way he's going to turn when this one, and that gives you such flexibility. But equally, as Chris was saying, we've had this problem at 10 last season with Ozil. He tried to play with Ramsey as a pressing 10, Ozil as a passing 10. Neither really work with any consistency. And if Ceballos can play as a 10, which early indications are he could comfortably, even if that's not his
strength,
maybe he where he thought he'd, it gives a lot more flexibility, because then you've got Torreira, Xhaka, Willock and Guendouzi. You've got four players there who you can rotate and not have to worry about fitting Ceballos in there. Obviously the person who loses out in that formation is going to be Mesut Ozil, but who knows what's going on with Mesut Ozil. Rumours are his people are talking to DC United in earnest now. So
really,
well, I read that this week. So, but I mean, Ceballos, I mean, it's a great problem to have. Where do you play with someone who's that good? But I think it would solve a problem for the team if he could play at 10.
Yeah.
And then you'd have Pepe on the right, or Reece Nelson, Aubameyang the left, or Martinelli. Or
Nelson,
you know,
can play left Nelson, as well, doesn't he? Left.
And then you've got Lacazette, who you can rotate with Aubameyang. You've got an embarrassment of riches. The 10 was the problem. You've got Willock as understudy, you know, to Ceballos. If Ozil goes, I'd be comfortable with that.
Is it a frustration that there was no... I know obviously there's nothing you could do about it, but there was no permanent option with that loan fee for
Massively. Ceballos. Do you know what the frustration as well is? It's a tricky one, because if he has a brilliant season, then his price is just going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
And then that'll probably put off...
Or he just goes back to Real Madrid,
Arsenal,
and goes straight into their first team.
Exactly. Yeah. So you could argue it that that's going to be difficult for us, but... You know, we can just poach someone like Madison off of you lot, because he looked good yesterday.
I think Leicester made it very clear he'll cost you more than Ceballos would, wouldn't he?
But I guess it also it's up to the player as well. Because the reason the player wanted to come on loan and play for a club like Arsenal was because he wants to play regularly. He wants to try and help us get in the Champions League.
That's a great point.
The question is, if he then helps us get in the Champions League, A, we've got more money so we could potentially buy him, and B, the player might actually say,
if he loves it.
I love it.
Yeah.
And there's a guy, I was just going to look it up, because Giles always knows everything about everything. There's two players in his position.
Yeah.
Another one's gone on loan somewhere else. Is it to AC Milan or Juventus? The other central midfield player. There's two young.
For Madrid.
Yeah, he's gone, it begins with O. I'll find it in a sec. But someone else has gone on loan from, and he's playing very well as well. So
I should know this. Still,
hold on. keep talking, I'll find it.
We're going to do this live on the radio. Dave's going to do some
research. Dave scrolls through his Twitter feed looking for answers.
Giles, where are you when we need you?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing as well is that my hope is that Zidane can actually still be manager come May, because clearly there's an issue there. So Zidane would have no problems with saying, no, you know, you can stay at Arsenal if you want. So my hope is that Real Madrid have a decent enough season that Zidane ends up still being in charge of the club by May.
Any luck, Dave?
No.
All right, I'm now on it as well. I'm on the Real Madrid squad. Who's gone somewhere?
Who's gone somewhere?
Anyway,
this is top class radio here, ladies and gentlemen.
Anyway, Chris, now what do you think, though? Would you rather see him where he played at the weekend and you're happy with that, or do you think...
Because
you've always been an Ozil fan, let's face it.
Yes.
So would you be comfortable seeing Ozil come in, give him a run and play Ceballos with either a Xhaka or a Torreira? Or would you think, okay, sorry, mate, you've had your chance?
It's tough, isn't it? Because the actual style of play and the players that we now have in that midfield option, you know, you've got Torreira, who is your bulldoggy, you know, he wins the ball, he's a good presser, he's a tackler, he covers ground. Then you've got Guendouzi, who plays next to him, who's, you know, a bit of a better distributor with the ball. You've got Xhaka as well, who's an even better distributor than Guendouzi. I think it depends on the team as well, because as I was saying, so Burnley afforded us that space because of the way that they played. Let's just take Liverpool next weekend. are they going to afford us that amount of space? Probably not. Because if they do, then both suppliers
well, they're playing
and
three
Ozil
in midfield.
Can play in that pocket.
Well, they're playing three in midfield, so no, they won't, definitely.
So then it's, does Ceballos work better dropping as a deeper? Yes, probably is a better option than someone like Ozil, because if he's not going to find pockets of space in the 10, then you just drop him back into an 8 or a 6 or something like that. So
We've discovered, by the way, who the player is, who's gone on loan to Real Sociedad. It's the remember the Norwegian wonder kid, Martin Ødegaard, signed as a 15-year-old. He's never going to play for Real Madrid first team. No. He's not. I mean, to put it into context, last season he was on loan at Vitesse Arnhem in the Eredivisie. A nice player, but he's not Real Madrid first team. This will be a season for him in La Liga.
So then it depends on the likes of Modric and Cruz then, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, because obviously they had Marcus Asensio who got picked up that horrible injury at the start of the season, and they also
He's more of a wide player.
I know, but just terms of midfield options, I mean, they're not fluid, but I'm just thinking of who would stop that move from potentially happening. It's all about whether Real Madrid go off and buy somebody, and as you rightly say as well, Chris, over Zidane's future, because I don't think Zidane will see out the season. I wouldn't say I don't think he'll see out the season, but there's a very good chance he won't see out the season. For whatever reason, he is already under pressure, and the season is, they had one game,
I think so.
Yeah, he kicked off the other night. Yeah, well, but anyway.
Either way, Danny Ceballos is a nice problem to have for the next 9 months anyway. I think he's a fan's favourite after one game.
Yeah, so. But I think you're right though. If he has a wonderful season, he's got his own chance. Everyone's going absolutely, you know, amazing for him. He's like, Do I go back to Real Madrid and be in and out of that side? Or do I go to Arsenal and be a hero?
Well, let's face it. It's not like playing regularly in the Premier League is going to stop you playing for Spain.
Of course not.
There's loads of players who, you know. So, I mean, Santi was obviously, you know, Alonso, there's loads of them. They've all played in England and been regulars for Spain. So being a regular for Arsenal would not stop his international aspirations. And, you know, then it comes down to a player's decision. And as we know in football, the players probably have most sway on this. Maybe not Real Madrid, but most clubs anyway, I guess.
Right, let's talk about the other big signing. Yeah, Nicolas Pepe. Yeah, first proper look at him at the weekend, came on at half time. What are your early signs and thoughts of him?
I liked him. Obviously.
Why? What did you like in particular about him?
He's got pace, which we already knew, but his sort of peripheral vision as well. There's a couple of instances where he seems to have his back to a player, but he kind of already knows where the player is. There's one gif that's doing the rounds
he
where
turned and nutmegs
he basically her. Nutmegs me. But when you look at it, he's not
Who?
Even properly looking at him.
Me.
Me.
You?
Yeah, he nutmegged me. I was on the pitch. I'm rubbish. But he did. He nutmegged the guy and then just went away. And it was a very quick turn. And they did that two or three times. But there was a couple of runs as well where he picked the ball up on the right-hand side.
Not just a speed merchant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He picked the ball up on the right-hand side and he just drove diagonally across the pitch. And he did that a couple of times. And I've seen that a couple of times when he was at Lille. And you just think, actually, that's going to be quite useful, because if we're going to have Lacazette and Aubameyang on the pitch as well, and if there's going to be movement and rotation, like as soon as he started driving across, I saw one of them, Lacazette or Aubameyang, immediately sort of diagonally go in the opposite direction.
They're all
and
intelligent that's going
to
footballers.
It's going to pull teams apart. It's going to pull defenders apart. It's going to create space. And, you know, we probably should have got a third goal when he was racing away and he's played the, you know, unfortunately it was a ball behind Aubameyang who didn't manage to finish it, but that's what I'm hoping to see a lot more.
It's lovely also, because having pace on its own is fantastic, but having pace and intelligence that's world class. I mean, I've seen Theo Walcott go from being a player that excited me to a player that was deathly dull.
But that is the difference.
Because he never realised, sometimes all you have to do is kick the ball past someone and run past them. Pepe's going to do that all the time. He's not embarrassed about it. Walcott can't defend
against it.
Yeah, you just lucky that one where he nutmegged. He was, but before me knew what was happening, Pepe was around the other side of him and gone. You know, and he's gonna use his pace. And if it means I don't need to use a trick, I don't need to use a trick. Nope. Walcott wouldn't do that. He didn't have a trick, and he didn't use his pace. It's an obvious example to use. Who's someone who is lightning quick?
Of course, fair.
And there are other players that are lightning quick that do use their intelligence, and we haven't had one of those for a long time, and we might naturally now have three. Because we've got Saka and Reece Nelson as well, and Martinelli. Yeah. So maybe even four within the first team squad, which is, we had one last season, if we were lucky, an outside.
That was one of the biggest problems of last season that drove all of us nuts, was we were so predictable, particularly when talking about the wide forwards. I mean, Mkhitaryan is just a bit of a... He's a no-hoper. I was holding my words there for radio.
I was
he's
kind
a
of hoping for something else.
Yeah, he's a no-hoper. And
I just don't know what's happened to him.
He got broke by Jose and he never recovered.
Strange, isn't it?
But
yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I've probably said this about 10 times on this station, but it was literally reliant on our fullbacks, get to the byline, cutting the ball back in, because our wide players was either Iwobi, which was dribble, 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 lose the ball, or dribble, 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 you know, daisy cutter straight down the goalkeeper's throat. So Everton fans have got that to look forward
well
to.
Well worth £40 million. Yeah.
But that's it. That was our width options, and it was just a paucity of options, whereas now it feels like we have genuine rotational opportunities.
Yeah, so what do you think will happen with Pepe in terms of his position and how he'll be integrated into the squad? Do you think he'll start next week, or do you think it's going to be a slow process, maybe by almost go as far as maybe at Christmas, and then we're seeing him, you know, really kind of hit his stride?
No, I don't think it'll be that long. I think it'll be like Torreira last season. I think it'll be maybe 5, 6, 7 games in, yeah. He'll start, and then he'll start all the time. Yeah. But he'll get an appearance every week. Yeah. But I mean, also going to Anfield for your first start, and, I mean, because whatever he is,
he's the making of him.
He's very slight.
Yeah,
you know, he's very slight, and he needs to beef up a bit for the Premier League. So I think, yeah, Anfield probably isn't the first place I would start him. But I guess we'll talk about it later, but it depends whether he is going to... I was slightly concerned that he's going to go to the three at the back. That's why he did it for the last 20 minutes at the weekend, which would make sense if you're going to be ultra cautious. And all your comments about, I hate playing Liverpool, I don't want to play Liverpool ever.
Yeah.
I know he was doing it tongue-in-cheek, but it didn't inspire me.
Well, I was looking at some of the stats from last season when we got absolutely spanked 5-1.
Everyone got spanked by them, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but we got spanked by them regularly, not just last season.
But I was thinking about this and thinking, well, you don't play with Aubameyang and Lacazette and Pepe away at Anfield. You know, we're not going to see that much of the ball. We had like 54-55% possession to Liverpool last season. They just hit us on the counter again and again and again. So I don't know, do you just say screw it, let's go with those tricky forwards and see what we can do?
Well, I say hold your thoughts on that Liverpool game. We'll do that later on before 8 p.m. We're going to take a break when we come back. We'll continue to talk about some of those options, not to talk about those young boys. I really want to talk about Willock and Nelson. As I was saying to you boys earlier on, I was doing the reporting for your Emirates Cup game against Lyon, and I thought the pair of them, both Nelson and Willock, looked the bee's knees, the real deal. That you've got a couple of potential real stars there. I'll get your thoughts on that next here on the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson in for Matt Beadle this evening. Manchester United head to Wolves, by the way, this evening. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff. Updates throughout the evening. But we are talking about Arsenal, and I want to chat about a couple of your young stars. I think Maitland-Niles, first of all, quickly.
Oh.
I like him. I like him a lot. Strange that I've got one of my best mates is an Arsenal fan. He keeps going on about, wouldn't it be nice to see Maitland-Niles play in midfield? Because that's where he plays. Every single time I've seen him, and he's played at right back, he looks a more than capable and competent right back. And he wasn't involved in the England 21s, was he, in the summer? Absolutely unbelievable. I think if you're playing for Arsenal first team, and you can play centre midfield and right back, I think Maitland-Niles is...
He's a World Cup winner under 20s, isn't he?
I think he's superb. Squad, so, yeah. I mean, what's the thought with Bellerin when he comes back? And can he keep that shirt, Maitland-Niles?
No.
No?
Nah. Bellerin is the next
level
up.
But do you think he's going to end up as a right back going forward? Do you when you talk about these players, I suppose almost like a Danny Welbeck here, is like, oh, if he moves there, he'll play in his normal position. But ultimately, it's like, well, no, that's why you're in this team, because of your versatility and your ability to play in that position. Do you think Maitland-Niles will always be one of them?
I think Maitland-Niles actually came out quite confidently in an interview towards the end of last season about, you know, when Hector's back, I'm going to give him a run for his money. Having said that, at that time, for the last 2 months of the season, we were playing, you know, with a 3-4-2-1. Mm. So he was playing as a wing-back. And he started, most of his youth career was a right midfielder. When he was on Ipswich on loan for that season, he was on right midfield. So he definitely feels comfortable, very comfortable going forward. The question is, can he improve his defensive abilities enough to be a Premier League right-back, as Lauren did, or, you know, as other players who have converted have done?
Is he defensively lacking?
Relative to Bellerin, he is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were times against Newcastle where you're kind of thinking, and then there were times against Burnley where they didn't trouble us at that as much, but up against McNeil, you know, the guy created chances and he had some options, he had some opportunities, didn't he? So Maitland-Niles does have a few questions over him, but also you've got to bear in mind that we spent most of the time with the ball on Saturday, and when we didn't have the ball, you know, Burnley were just lumping it into channels, and all he's got to do is then chase. And that's one thing that you will say about Maitland-Niles, he has pace and he has recovery pace, and that gets him out of quite a bit of trouble.
Oh yes,
he'll definitely get either way. You know, as it is with the top side these days, he's going, even if Bellerin's fit, he's still going to play every Europa League game.
Yep.
He's going to play every League Cup game. And when we have injuries, he can play, as you say, he can play. He's played, well, two seasons ago, he was playing left wing back in the Europa League. Yeah. And obviously, he can play central midfield. So he's definitely a useful squad player. Whether he'll go the way of Alex Iwobi after 3 or 4 years and actually think,
Not quite push on,
or just get an opportunity to go and play regularly. I don't know, but certainly I'd say he's popular with the Arsenal fans because he's one of our own, and we will give him a chance like we did at Wobi. And ultimately, nobody was like, "See you later, Alex." Tough. It was good, thanks very much. Good deal for the club. It's no hard feelings, because you're always going to give more, you know, slack to one of your own.
Yeah, naturally. No, I was interested to gauge it because I feel that outside of Arsenal, people aren't really talking about Maitland-Niles.
Well, that assist against Newcastle.
Yeah, I just think if you're his age and playing for a top six team and an English player, you'd be playing at the under-21s at the very least, or there'd be discussions of you playing for the full national side, and it just doesn't seem to be happening with Maitland-Niles. But whenever I've seen him play, I've always been impressed. Yeah,
you've got Bissaka, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Kieran Trippier, and Kyle Walker ahead of you. Yeah. I just think he probably doesn't want to play right back.
Yeah,
it's probably the one position you don't want to be playing if you want to be an England international right now.
Fair point. I'll take that one. So let's talk about these other two then: Joe Willock and Reece Nelson, both starting. I have to say, personally, I was surprised to see both their names in the starting lineup. Were you surprised? And if not, was it very much warranted?
I wasn't surprised at Willock.
Yeah.
I was surprised at Nelson.
How did the boys do?
But Willock has now played two games in two different positions. He played the first game in 10, where Ceballos played at the weekend. He played alongside Guendouzi when he had Torreira on the bench. Presumably Elneny is somewhere. Xhaka wasn't. But he still selected Guendouzi and a younger Willock ahead of Torreira.
It's brave, isn't it?
Who probably isn't match fit, but nevertheless, it's a brave decision.
I think that's got a bit to do with it, is getting the players up to fitness. But one of the things I think, from my perspective, that's impressed me on Willock is his physical growth. So I went to...
it's a big lad.
Yeah, I went to Blackpool away last season in January, and he played, and I thought, he looks a bit slight, he looks a bit slender, you know, he's good with the ball at his feet, and he knocks the ball around when the ball's at his feet,
I've seen him loads of times at half time, because all the kids sit there when I was sitting block 31, so they come out and have a coffee at half time while I'm having a pint, obviously, and I don't chat to them, but I have been in a conversation, and he is diminutive. 2 years ago he was, you're right, absolutely slender as a beanpole, but he's definitely shot up about 2 inches over the summer, and he's been on the weights, he needs to be on them more, but he's technically so good, and he's got a brain well ahead of his years. Definitely.
Yeah, he's very good with the ball.
Confident young man.
He's a good passer. His physicality has improved as well. He's actually able to. People aren't shrugging him off the ball, and he wins tackles too.
Last year he was obviously behind Emil Smith Rowe in Emery's thinking, because in the Europa League, Emil Smith Rowe played all the first rounds of games, scored
really
a couple
of
goals, then went on loan, then Willock got his chance, but he was definitely in the manager's mind behind. So it'll be interesting to see when Emil Smith Rowe comes back, because he's played a very couple of impressive games down to 23s now, and he's looking very, very good again. So you've got another one there.
This is always the thing, isn't it? And it can be so unfortunate as a footballer's career, because Smith Rowe had a couple of injuries, and all of a sudden, if you were to say he suddenly gets fit, you probably wouldn't be putting him ahead of Willock right
in
now.
In that time, so he's injured, so much can happen. Someone
else. Well, he also played wide more often last year, didn't he? Out wide, but he can play 10, definitely. Yeah. But no, Reece Nelson, I mean, he's the one that the fans have been watching. He's like that sort of Jack Wilshere when he, you know, made his debut at 16. Reece Nelson's been that sort of player for 2 or 3 years. Everyone's been waiting for that Reece Nelson to break through. Went on loan. Everyone's watching all the YouTubes of him at Hoffenheim, and oh yeah, it's getting exciting. But right now, I'm more excited by Joe Willock.
Me too. I think Nelson has done well. I wonder if the whole Pepe situation has impacted that. But Pepe is a right-sided inverted winger. Nelson, predominantly for Hoffenheim, played on the left. So, you know, you could technically play both of them if, you know, playing Ober up top or if you're playing Lacazette up top.
I don't think Reece Nelson suffers from a lack of confidence, so I think he'll be up for the challenge.
Definitely. And what's interesting about him, like I said earlier on, is he very much enjoys, you know, give me the ball, I'm going to quickly release it and go. So it's not just about give me the ball, I'm going to try and drive at somebody with a ball at my feet, which is what Iwobi did. One of the biggest issues that we had with Iwobi was not that with him with a ball at his feet, it was like he got into the final third and absolutely what? Cacked himself. Yeah. He did. You'd look at him. You'd look at him and you'd just think, we know what you're going to do. You're going to beat four players and then you're going to just knock the ball out for a corner.
To be fair to him, though, as he said subsequent to moving, he always wanted to play centrally. When he broke into the team 4 years ago...
He's not going to play centrally at Everton, is he?
What? No, I think the plan is... Yeah, but Sigurdsson's what, 32?
I don't think he's 30.
Is he not?
No, I don't think
Seems
so.
Seems like he's been around a long time. Well, that's where obviously... Well, the manager's obviously told him he's going to play centrally, or he wouldn't have come out in that interview and said it. So I guess there is a possibility. I don't mean centrally deep. I mean in the 10 role, which is where... He broke into the side. I mean, I think Preston
away... Everton are playing like eight central midfielders as their team.
Well, their squad is huge. But I think Preston away, he played at 10 when we went in the FA Cup about 3 years ago. And Sunderland, there was a couple of games where Ozil was rested and he played at 10 and he did look impressive. So we'll see.
He won't get his chance in the centre, I don't think. I think what will happen is he'll end up going wide and we'll see.
Well, he took Theo's place at Arsenal. He's now going to take Theo's place at Everton.
Gilfie's 29, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's been around a long time, hasn't he?
No, he has. He's been around forever. But, you know, Nelson and Willock, the pair of them, and, you know, I suppose you can throw Smith Rowe in there as well.
You can throw Guendouzi in there. He's 19.
No, but I just think in terms of the boys obviously come through your system, ultimately could save the club an absolute fortune. I mean, which is an obvious thing to say, but at the same time, kind of speeds up maybe the process of moving out the likes of Mkhitaryan and Ozil, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah. And you don't have to take... Well, we are taking the financial hit with someone like Mkhitaryan or Ozil, but it doesn't impact it from the footballing side because you see these type of players. What I want to see more of this season, which Emery didn't do in the Europa League early doors, is play some of these players. Let's have more of them into these group games. Last season, for the first couple of group games, I certainly remember the first home game, he went almost full strength team. It was, and I can understand why, because he clearly thought, well, I'll get to 12 points and then I can just rest players when we've qualified. But I think we're now at a point where we need to say these players have got to play and they've got to play more regularly than just, you know, the final couple of meaningless games after you've qualified. You know, they've got to be playing in the League Cup. They've got to be playing from the start of the Europa League because that's not our priority now. Our priority is get back to the Champions
League. Yeah, Smith Rowe was the only one really, wasn't he, at the beginning of last year, who played regularly.
Okay, are you ready to talk about Liverpool yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we'll do that.
Joint leaders of the Premier League now, I think.
Oh, hey, two games in, but we're going to do that next. We'll take a break. But afterwards, we're going to be joined by Bobby Murdoch. He is a Liverpool fan, also a comedian. It is the dreaded game against Liverpool and Manchester City. Nobody's going to want to play those two. Is it a good time to play them this early on? Or is it kind of just one of those games you kind of want to get over and done with? But we'll do all of that next, until 8 p.m. this evening. Love Sports. Right, we're just getting Bobby on the line, Liverpool fan and comedian. But before then, chaps, let's discuss the trip to Anfield. Is it a good time or bad time? Or is there no such thing to play Liverpool?
So we were just talking about this, obviously, off air.
And were we? Tell them that.
Were we?
Oh, come on. Let's get behind the curtain.
Save all the gold from air when the mic is live.
And much like your team, Leicester, against Chelsea at the weekend and against Southampton, against Liverpool at the weekend, if they'd have done the amount of travelling that they did and then to get back, I think they got back on like Thursday night or early hours of the morning or something like that, and then play on the Saturday, then you'd probably fancy a bit more our chances in terms of a fatigue, because the intensity of the press of Liverpool's teams, the way in which they attack, again, like I said, the press, it maybe will have had an impact, but with a whole week, you know, from Saturday to Saturday, there's no midweek action at the moment. I can see it being a difficult one for us because they'll be fully back up to speed.
I genuinely see it as a complete free hit. Yeah. You know, if you take those first four games, Newcastle, Burnley, Liverpool, then the North London Derby, I would want 9 points guaranteed. 10 points would be a massive. I'd be chuffed as bits. So if we can get a draw at Anfield and beat Spurs, four games in, I'll be more than happy with 10 points. I think we'll still be top two if that's the case.
I don't want to play negative devil's advocate.
Negative Nelly.
But if we do lose to Liverpool, if it's a heavy one like last season, then you go into the North London Derby and
it's
totally
a one-off game. It's a one-off game, North London Derby. It's not what the previous result never affects the North London Derby, surely. The players are going to be... They're always up for the North London Derby.
I don't know.
So you think the importance... You would rather we went out with three at the back and played safe to try and not get humped?
Yeah, to be honest with you. I have to be... I don't want to say...
Well,
surprising we get on, really, isn't it?
We're getting this.
Do you know what, though? It's just because it's Liverpool, and Liverpool and City are so streaks ahead of everyone else that, you know, and at Anfield, you know, if it was at the Emirates, I'd even have, you know, I'd even be feeling a little bit more confident because I'd fancy we're a better thing. But we have a horrendous record in recent years against Anfield. It's like 5-1, lost 5-1 last season, lost 4-0 the season before, lost 3-1 the season before. It's not good reading. So, don't know, maybe the karma gods can come back to help us
right,
out.
Have a bit of positivity, please, Dave.
I know.
Chris has just killed the mood there.
No, I'm all for it. I mean, for me, it's more about what the team selection is. I mean, I want him to play the same formation away from home in this game.
And Whittaker Nelson start again?
Not necessarily, but I think you've got players to come. He will go courses in that Xhaka will play, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, he'll bring the experienced, you know, older player back in. The question will be whether he plays Ceballos. And if it's Xhaka and Guendouzi or Xhaka and Torreira, I think Torreira and Xhaka, if with a full week's training, will probably both play. And if that is the case, then I think hopefully we'll stay 4-2-3-1 and just go for them on the break because we've got that speed on the flanks we didn't have last year. Will be wary of that. Because their fullbacks push right on.
Yeah, they do.
You know, there's loads of space behind Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Quite good, though.
Yeah, they're quite good.
Yeah, and energetic, and they will get backwards.
So are our wide players, as we've just been discussing.
If I'm going to allow any fullbacks to go forward, I'd allow them that freedom.
Yeah.
I trust them. Trust them, but they're not going to let you down.
Apparently, they've got some Dutch centre back who's quite good.
Nah, he'll never catch on.
Harry Van Maguire, they didn't sign him.
So the four at the back, though, do you not think with their three, is it not a little bit scary? Come on, Dave.
No, it is a little bit scary.
It's a huge test, isn't it? If people have still got the question marks over that Arsenal back five, to be coming up against this front three,
it's huge. And also, so what's the back four going to be? Monreal, who's not any great shakes, and he's
playing well at the moment. He always starts the season where he gets tired at the end of the season.
He was okay, but he's not been brilliant. You've got Luis and Sogradis, which is still I'm still doing it.
It's very good.
Which is still I've got a question. I've actually started to have question marks over Sogradis because he just looked, at times, he just looked a bit funny. He seems to have...
I had a chicken Sogradis of the weekend.
With extra chilli sauce.
Oh dear! I don't know where to go from there,
Bobby.
No, but do you know what I mean? It's Monreal. It's I'm going to Socrates. It's Luiz and Maitland-Niles.
So you'd rather go with Kolasinac against and Maitland-Niles with three?
I probably would.
So then you go.
I think we're better equipped, and if you think David Luiz operates better in a three as well, so you've got Chambers to come in as well. Then who plays in the middle? I don't know. You'd probably say Xhaka and Torreira seems to work best. And then you've got
Ceballos and Aubameyang behind, like I said.
Yeah.
Mm. Right, we've got Bobby on the phone, by the way. Bobby Murdoch, Liverpool fan and comedian. Very good evening, Bobby. Cheers for coming on.
Hi, you guys. How are you?
We're all good, Bobby.
Terrified.
We're not, nervous about coming to Anfield
exactly.
at all.
I think they're all good, but we're trying to discuss whether we think it's a decent time to play in Liverpool, kind of getting it done early on, you know, heading up to Anfield. Having seen your boys early on this season, is it a good time? What are they looking like early on in the season, Bobby?
I think as opposition, it's never a good time to play the Champions of Europe, is it?
probably not, but we're trying to find positives here for the guys.
Oh, I don't need positives for Arsenal. I just need positives for Liverpool.
All right.
No, I think I don't think there is any positives if your opposition coming to Anfield. I think what it is for us, if our front three are fit.
Is this part of your act?
No. Hey, mate, I couldn't broadcast my act on your radio station. I'd have you shut down. But I think if our front three are fit and firing, it doesn't matter if you're Barcelona, Real Madrid, who the hell are you trying to kid? You know, that's what we say. So I think, I think if we're on form, although, you know, joking aside, I am a big football fan and I'm a huge admirer of Aubameyang and I love Lacazette. I think he's good. And, you know, I am a football fan first. I think this new guy that you've signed in the middle of the park...
Ceballos.
I think he's quality.
Yeah.
Do you know, when you got him, I knew a little bit about him, not much, but I'd seen him in action and I thought, wow, what a player you've got there on a free.
He's no Oxlade-Chamberlain, though, is he?
No, he's not. He's not. But I think he's a very, very, very good player. I think that's a... I wouldn't say it's a find. It's the fact that the club have got him on a free.
Well, it's a loan. It's a loan, unfortunately, Bobby.
Yeah, you know what I mean, a loan, a free or whatever. But yeah, I mean, if he shows any of the form that he's shown internationally, he is a danger. Mm. He's a threat. I think that's what Arsenal have been missing. I think they've been missing someone who can get stuck in. They've been missing. You know, it's hard to go back, and you don't like saying it. And Arsenal fans love him, Patrick Vieira, obviously.
Yeah.
Of course, we can't go back in time unless you can get his DNA and inject it into every Arsenal player. I think you're knackered, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's the same with us with Gerrard. You know, you're never going to replace that. But I think in terms of modern football, it's not about putting big tackles in anymore. I think modern football now, it's what I call a good old-fashioned shoulder-to-shoulder. That's what you can get away with. And that's why Van Dijk's so good. If you watch Van Dijk, never really puts a big tackle in, but he's a big old unit.
So who do you think he'll go with in the midfield three? Because he's got a lot of options at Anfield there. And I don't know if he knows which is his favourite three at the moment.
But they're all big game players, aren't they? You know, you look at Fabinho, big game player. You look at Henderson, big game player. You look at Wijnaldum, big game player. You look at Milner, big game player. You know, so what's fit and available is good. I think the only question marks. And I feel a bit sorry for him. I feel a little bit sorry for Adam Lallana. I think he could be that creative midfielder that we all keep talking about. But unfortunately, this is just my opinion, and I don't want to upset anyone when I say this, I think Adam Lallana's been too interested in playing for England than he has been for Liverpool over the last couple of years. Mm. I think he's been thinking, I'll get myself fit for England before he gets himself fit for his club. And the only last person that did that used to play for Liverpool, in my opinion, and I'm going back a long, long time, is Michael Owen. That's what ruined Michael Owen. He was more interested in getting fit for England than he was for Liverpool first.
Mm.
And I do think you have a duty to the people that pay you wages. And don't get me wrong, I think, Lallana's gone away with England when he should have stayed at Melwood, you know, or he's been played for England when he should have been again at Melwood recovering, you know. But I think in terms of a lot of our midfielders are the same, aren't they? Wijnaldum's the same, Milner's the same. Henderson's the same. Fabinho, I love him. I just think he's a big ugly man that gets stuck in, and I love players like that.
What about Keita? He hasn't really stepped up, has he?
No, again, he's had injuries. He's had a few. I think he had a back problem against Barcelona. He limped off, didn't he? And then he's apparently got a hamstring now. And I think with those types of injuries, they sort of be linked. Once you get a problem with your lower back, you know, then your leg goes because your back's not quite right. You know, it's like if your knee's not right, then you have an ankle problem. If your ankle's not right, then you have, you know, metatarsal problems and stuff like that. And I just think his injuries are trickling down his body at the moment. I think what needs to be done with Keita is the people need to make a decision and say, do you know what? You're just going to have 3 months off. If that's what it takes to get you fit.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit disappointed. I mean, I've seen the transfer news today. You guys will have seen it. Philip Coutinho going to
Bayern Munich.
I just can't believe Liverpool couldn't do a deal there to get him back on loan. Or the rumour was that we'd pay 90 million. We still would have had 60 million in the bank, but we would have got Coutinho back for 90 million.
Mm. No, if
we'd have done that, then Barcelona would have been halfway there to getting Neymar back.
Yeah.
You know.
Bobby, just a quick one. If there's any question marks for me over this Liverpool side, it's the goalkeeper.
Mm.
We all know how wonderful Alisson is. Adrian, yeah. he made a mistake against Southampton. He was West Ham's number two, ultimately. Is everything you all convinced, say, that he's not going to be a weak link against Arsenal?
No, I don't think he will be. I think that can happen to any goalkeeper. And I think Klopp, if I was Klopp, I'd be saying to Van Dijk after the game, I'd be saying, why did you pass it back to Adrian? You know he's not good with his feet. You know, and what could he have done in that situation? If you're not a footballing goalkeeper, that can happen to anyone, that.
Yeah.
But what I would say to you is look at the highlights before. You know, he saves one out of nowhere off the line, and then he does another bit of brilliance. I mean, what you've got to imagine is when you're a goalkeeper, all's I want, And all I ever want from every Liverpool player that I watch, I want one moment of brilliance. So if it's one world-class save that keeps it at 2-1, then so be it. If it's a world-class tackle by Van Dijk, you know, that clears one off the line and we win 2-1, I don't care. You know, but I think Adrian's done really well since he's come in. Look how he played in that Super Cup final. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was brilliant. The only one that I could have pulled the bones out was the most was the easiest save, which was Giroud's shot.
Yeah.
Sort of went past him a bit, didn't it? But everything else, I couldn't fault him on. And as a number two, to come in the way he has, you know, and he's come in at very short notice. You know, and he got injured by a fan as well, didn't he? Which
Bobby,
was a
little we'll have to leave it there, my friend. I can hear you've got some action going on in the background as well. So, chaps, just very quickly before we have to go, running quickly out of time as we always do, score predictions. And do you think that Adrian is the weak link there? Do you go for him?
I think we'll lose 4-1.
Oh, Chris, after all that...
Well, no, do you think he's going to go 3 at the back?
4-1, but Adrian mistake.
Yeah, that's it.
3 at the back?
I think he will go 3 at the back. I've got a weird feeling about it.
And you still think we'll lose 4-1 with 3 at the back?
I think we're going to get done.
And Dave, very quickly from you, please, my friend.
I think he will go 3 at the back, sadly, and I don't want him to, but I think he'll be tight, actually, tighter than people think. I think
it's got to be goals, isn't there?
I might be 2-2 on this one.
So you've both gone 4 goals, 6 goals, 5 goals. Well, look, chaps, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully you get your win, and hopefully I'll be back here again soon. It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Up next for Arsenal is the small matter of a trip to Anfield. That is the 5:30 kickoff this coming Saturday.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.